This is a anyone who knows me well knows that the as the year starts to come to a close, it becomes it's a very emotional experience for many of the Rebbeim in Yeshiva, myself certainly included. Yeah, I would promise myself though to never let it go until towards the very end. So I have a whole week of Yeshiva. I can't look at you in the face and be emotional right now. So I'm going to bite my lip if I ever feel like I need to be. But I want to show you a message, and it's really based on thanks to David and to Eitan, who came to me recently, and a few other Rebbeim, and asked for parting words. You know, people are leaving to go to different places next year, summertime as well. Blineda this coming Thursday night will have also a panel of options, of opportunities to hear different speakers in the yeshiva to address issues coming up over the next number of weeks, or it could be number of years of your life, and we'll go around and publicize that more as we get closer to it. But I thought to share with you hope, words of wisdom that will escort you on your way for the next few days and out of yeshiva. I'm also going to try to sprinkle if I can. The sporting world has lost a great icon, Muhammad Ali, who is apparently a raging anti-Semite. Cassius Clay was a nice man, but Muhammad Ali turned the corner. But he happens to have some unbelievable quotes. I'm going to quote a number of quotes that he was known, among his top quotes, as hopefully maybe the Ilui Neshama, maybe, if he's Zoka. I don't know if he's Zoka, be able to share with you some ideas that he had that actually were very profound and deep, and things that you can take with you from life also. You know, I'm sure, and later on, Rosh Shiva, not during Shiva, Rosh Shiva afterwards, will share with you, I'm sure, where we find in the Torah such statements as well. But I plead with him in advance not to shout about Milashir. Just we'll talk about it afterwards.
I'm going to
go. Can't win. Shmuel Rosenfeld, before he left, begged me to tell the story over, and I didn't. I didn't know I was speaking a speech. I didn't even know I was, but now that I'm speaking a speech, I texted him last night. I said, Shmuel, I'm telling the story you want me to, and he was very excited and happy to hear that. So, in honor of Shmuel, about a week and a little bit ago, I told a story to Rav Hashem Shabbaton about my children and the candles that were lit, are relit. There's another story I want to share with you about my children also, but nothing to do with candles, but it's equally, I don't know if I want to say disturbing or bizarre. And I'll tell you the lesson at the very end, like I did last, just a week and a half ago, what I took from this lesson and what I want to share with you as well. My in-laws have a place in Yerushalayim, and Baruch Hashem, all their children live here. My wife and her three brothers all live in Eretz Yisrael. And whenever they come in, all the family comes. Doesn't matter what time of day it is, doesn't matter what's going on in our lives. Everything stops. We go to the compound, as it's called, and we all spend time as a family together. And there are times, Kanai Nahara, my in-laws have many, many grandchildren. You know, I'm right now tied for the least amount, and I have six Baruch Hashem in the family. Kids, thank you, I appreciate it. It's amazing. there's a lot of kids. And it gets rowdy sometimes. And there's a particular time that happened approximately 5 years ago, we'll give it. When I, the age range of the children, I have four kids at the time, I mean, that's Baruch Hashem, six, but I have four kids who are the ages of 8 and 7. 2 7s and 2 8s. And there's every person in the family, almost every single family has someone of those ages as well. And they're all gathered at the end of the table, the other end of the table, my in-laws at one end, they're all on the other end, hanging out, being children as they're supposed to be. And my kids are normally very well behaved. But I noticed that some of them were taking plastic cups and throwing them at each other. Throwing cups at each other, and I was like, oh goodness, like, my father must see this, or he's gonna blow a gasket. But I wasn't gonna tell him about it. Sometimes I got to notice myself. And sure enough, after 2 minutes, 3 minutes, you hear your plastic falling on the floor. He turns and he sees what's the chaos at the end of the table. And he says to the children, bang his hand on the table, enough throwing cups at the table. I'm like, thank God someone has the guts to stop this thing. And then he calls in someone who was helping us serve and he says, take those cups away, bring them glass cups right now. So I was like, my father, I respect him, Baruch Hashem, he's a great man, very smart. But that's a terrible idea. Sure enough, you know, my 8-year-olds, my 7-year-olds are like looking, like licking their chops. Glass cups. My parents don't give me like glass silver, you know, real silverware. They don't give me knives, and I get glass cups. They put in front of each kid a long stemmed glass cup. And to my shock, my children turned to like fine Englishmen, dabbing with napkins at the side of their mouth. And they were like adults. And I didn't understand that. I was blown away. What happened? And I'll tell you my shot in a few minutes from now. I mentioned that Muhammad Ali has left the world. Cassius Clay, as Rabbi David knew him better. I'm going to give you a number of quotes that he had. I'm going to use them as just understanding of the world in a deeper way, and what we could perhaps take from this, just in general, our lives, the world, etc. He was quoted as saying the following quote, among others: "The man who has no imagination has no wings." Okay, put that aside for a second. Debbie, don't comment. Hold off on that. The very first time I ever spoke to the yeshiva, if you remember it, maybe you don't remember it, maybe you do. I don't take it personally if you don't. It was in the cafeteria, and it was before we went to our first walk to the Kotel. And I described a little bit some of the halachas of Hilchos Kriya, the yeshiva. I spoke to yeshiva as well, the significance, and that there are ways around it. But really, it's important to remind ourselves that we're at a terrible loss in our lives. And you're allowed to tear a shirt. You're allowed to tear a shirt. It's not a big deal. It's just a shirt. But I quoted to you a story of a golfer in Rory McIlroy. I remind you what I said to you months ago. Some of you are taking this story to heart, at least it looks like you have, and some of you may not have yet. When he was a young boy of 14 years old, so his father went to a betting service that they have in London, in England, and he placed a very bizarre wager that his son, who at the time was 14, would within the next 10 years win the British Open. Which the British Open is the, perhaps at least among Europeans, it is the greatest accomplishment for a golfer in the world. At the time, Tiger Woods already was well known. So he knew he'd have X amount of years of having to compete with the greatest maybe ever seen in the world. And yet he placed a wager on his son, X amount of pounds, hundreds of pounds, that his son would win the greatest tournament in the world. And the end, months before the bet ran out, his son, Rory McIlroy, won the British Open. And that whole article, how his son won X amount of hundreds of thousands of dollars, or maybe it was millions of dollars, and he won $370,000 with his bet years earlier. And he only won that little because he couldn't place a larger wager. They limit the max amount of money you can win, and they limit the wager. Now, why did he win? Obviously, he's a very talented golfer. But it does not hurt to have someone in your life trust in you so much. They believe in you to the extent that you can win the greatest tournament in the entire world when you're 14 years old. If someone had that much confidence in you, and they believe in you so much, then there's probably a much greater chance of you actually figuring that out and accomplishing that yourself. It happens to be that you have great people betting on you also. Your parents bet on you, obviously. The yeshiva and your rebbe would spend tons of time on you, bet on you, obviously. But more than even our bets, we're only human, is God bet on you. Hashem himself bet on you. How do we know? Because you're here. Because right now you're sitting in a room alive. And if God didn't bet on you, you wouldn't be here anymore. If Hashem didn't feel you were worthy or able to accomplish great things, you would not exist right now. So Kadosh Baruch Hu bet tremendous money on you. He bet his most precious thing, he bet his neshama on you, by giving you a gift called your soul. And he believes with your soul you can accomplish great things. So Rory McIlroy's father bet on him and he broke all the odds, but God also bet on you. You too could break odds. And we know he bet on us because we have a Mishnah of us that tells us the following thing in Perek Gimel, Mishnah Yeches. Rabbi Kiva used to say, Chaviv Adam Shnifer B'Tselem. That man is so beloved that God created him B'Tselem Elokim in God's own image. But even more than that, Chiva Yisero, he gave you even more love. You know why? No Daslo, he told you. He shared with you this secret that you never betell. He told you. He said to you, I'm creating you in my image. It's one thing to do it, another thing to share with you that you are given the gift of being godlike. That means he trusts in you more than anything else in the world. And you might have failed a million times already. You might have. But the bottom line is, if you're still here today, he still to this day trusts in you very much. We'll get to what that trust means and what you should do that trust in a few moments from now. But the real question is, how much do you bet on yourself? You think God made a bad bet? He doesn't make bad bets usually. How much do you trust in yourself? Do you think you can accomplish in this world? or you're just one of many, many billions of people just going through life, coasting through. To quote Muhammad Ali, "I am the greatest. I said it before I knew I was." He believed in himself, and he would say those words before he even knew it to be true. And he in fact became the greatest. But he had a certain amount of confidence that he could get there one day. If you look at yourself in the mirror, and you feel like, what can I do with myself? What am I going to accomplish anyways? Then you're absolutely right, you will be a failure. It's true. But if you look in the mirror, you say, one second, someone much greater than me who believes in me, then I can do anything in the world. There's nothing that I can't accomplish. If God trusted me so much and he gave me ability and talent, which he must have, because you're currently still here, then it's my job to fulfill the responsibility that God placed me in this world for. I mentioned that Thursday night, hopefully again with inspiration of Eitan Dubin and others, we're going to address the remainder of just certain discussions about taking the next stage of life. But I want to share with you a conversation I had with someone who currently is in YU, a very close Talmid of mine. Actually, they're twin brothers, Talmidim of mine in YU. And they shared with me a scary thought. And they said to me that one of the greatest challenges I think people leave the year in Israel with, mostly they say we leave after Shana Aleph, but it could be even Shana Bet, guys. They don't feel empowered. They don't feel able. They don't feel capable. They don't feel ready to take on the next stage of life. And therefore, when they get there, they feel like they're blindsided. They feel, who am I anyways? I really can't do it. They said to me before, you must empower the boys. You must share with them how much they can accomplish. And I even quoted them boys who are doing so well. He says, hey, he's doing really well, but he's not killing it. He's not killing it. He's doing fine. He's doing good. But he's not killing it. You have to tell the guys when they leave that there's no reason why they can't kill it in a positive way. You know, I don't care where you go. I don't care if you go to YU. I don't care if you go to Baruch. I don't care if you go to McGill. I don't care if you go to Maryland. I don't care if you go to an Ivy League college or anywhere else in the world. It doesn't matter. You can kill it. You can sit and you can look in the mirror and every morning wake up and say, God, you trust me? I'll make you proud today. Or you say to yourself, what am I? I failed yesterday. I failed during this part of my year in Israel. I did this mistake 2 weeks ago. I'm a nothing. So God doesn't believe you're nothing. He believes very much in you. To quote from Muhammad Ali, it isn't the mountain that wears you down. It's the pebble in your shoe. We look at these big, big things that are so far away from us, and we're like, I just can't accomplish that. But it's not really, that's not the big thing. It's when you're walking, you're like, ooh, ow, what is that thing? And these tiny little things in your life just knock you out. It's not the big accomplishments that knock you out. It's not the overwhelming thing. It's the, I missed the mini one day, ugh, I lost my streak. Or, I made this mistake over here, I can't go on anymore. I can't do this anymore. It's too hard for me. It's a moment. It's a small little thing that you failed in. It's something you stumbled in. You stubbed your toe. And then you just chuck it. I can't do it. It's too hard for me. I don't believe in myself anymore. To quote Muhammad Ali, if you understood that your life is full of many, many twists and turns, and you'll have times when you'll stumble, and you're supposed to. Shevi Yipo Tzadik Bekam, not only is it supposed to, but Dafu will make the Tzadik is when he falls down. There's a great Michael Jordan commercial, you can watch it later on, you can find it somewhere on YouTube, where he goes through all of his failures in life. I missed X amount of shots, lost Y amount of games, failed Z amount of times. And that's why I succeed. The pebbles in your shoe that cause you to stumble and be in pain and stop and take them out is what should give you the opportunity to succeed well later on. But we, unfortunately, in our lives, we do the opposite. We look at our errors and our struggles, and then we give up. There's a boy who I'm very, very close with, and he mamash thrived in Israel for the year, beautifully. And I thought like he was like coasting. He'd be coasting, I mean, in a positive way. He'd be in clear for forever. Came to bed. Like that's obviously it's a home run. Went to YU, and then within a year, he was like struggling terribly. And he spoke to me that summer on the phone afterwards, and he said to me the following line, which I'll never forget, and it pained me so much. And I couldn't disagree with him more. He said to me, you didn't prepare me for the next stage of life. You didn't prepare me. You didn't give me the tools how to accomplish and overcome the challenges that I had afterwards. You didn't give it to me. Now, if I told you this boy, more than anyone else, worked so much on those same exact tools, but he failed anyways. I tried to explain to him the following muscle. I'll give it to you as well. Imagine that someone gives you a gun. They train you how to shoot. And then someone pops out at you at some point, somewhere in your life, and you just have to pull the trigger. And you opt not to. You can't blame anyone but yourself at that point in time. All you can get while you're here in the year of Israel is someone to help you understand what your weapons are and how do you accomplish things. But at the end of the day, it's really up to you. You hold in your hands the keys to everything. Every success. Success is in learning. Success is in davening. Going to minyanim. Boy and girl relationships. You hold in your hands all those things, and you probably know why each one's important if you don't just get somewhere very soon. Whether you do it or not is not up to us. It's up to you. And if you want it bad, you want to be a great person, you want it bad enough, then you should make it your business that you accomplish and you feel strong in those areas. And if there's a pebble in your shoe, stop now, take it out, and work with someone else how to fix that problem. Don't get overwhelmed when you feel like you're not succeeding in these areas. Even though we'll say this later on, I'll say it to you right now. When a person fails and he messes up badly, don't ever be embarrassed to call your Rebbe. Don't ever be embarrassed. You can tell them what you did. You don't tell them. It doesn't matter. You tell me. Don't tell me. Don't tell me. You don't want to, but you can. They'll never judge you. They will never judge you based on what you did. They'll only help pick you up if you fell down. You messed up terribly. A terrible thing you did wrong. Could even be illegal. Reach out to your Rebbe. You say, I made a terrible mistake. You may ask what it is. You may want to tell him. You may want to tell him. There's nothing that you could possibly do that would ever make your Rebbe reject you. Ever. And if you understood that, then when a pebble comes in your shoe, you have him to help take you out. You don't have to wait until the time comes when you had pebble after pebble. You just give up. You don't have to wait for that to happen. Muhammad Ali said, if they can make penicillin out of moldy bread, they can make something out of you. Great quote. My daughter asked me at the Shabbos table, this past Shabbos, she said to me, you know, why are the two Torah holidays? The Simchas Torah? And then there's Matan Torah. We celebrate receiving the Torah and we celebrate finishing the Torah. So she was bothered by that. She wanted to understand, why don't we just double dip a little bit? Why don't we have them at the same time? Many people in this room, at this point in the year, could accomplish and celebrate the Simchas Torah. They've made siyumim. They've had great accomplishments. They feel growth. They've had chidushim. They're learning Mishnah Yomi. Great accomplishments. But there are some of them who can't feel that way. And Simchas Torah passes, they don't feel the Simcha of Torah. They don't connect to the learning of Torah. But every single person can feel a Simcha of a Matan Torah. Because it means that you were given a gift that is priceless. You can do anything you want. You're not judged for how you did with it already. It's a gift that you're given. And it's there was no strings attached. It's yours. Not only that, but because we're told, the Gemara says, I gave you a Torah, and I gave myself with that Torah. We're given the gift of God in our lives. You don't need to have even succeeded this year. You could have had goals that you failed in learning-wise. But don't ever hang your head on a Matan Torah. Shavuos means that you're given the gift again and renewing. It doesn't matter what you accomplished. It matters what you're looking to accomplish. Your opportunities that you have abound. And to quote Muhammad Ali, and it's perfect for this time of year, don't count the days. Make the days count. A person in life, you can look at all that you haven't done. You just look, you're counting all your failures, all your struggles. I couldn't, I didn't, I haven't. But you know what? You have it today. Make today count. Do something with your today right now. Figure out a way to accomplish beyond the mistakes we may have made. Even if we were successful very much, we probably could have done more. Don't lament on your failures. Be excited about your potential and your opportunities. Muhammad Ali said the will must be stronger than the skill. You notice there's a lot of like rhyming or themes like that. I guess that's just the way people remember in the quotes, but will must be stronger than the skill. I'm gonna fast forward if I can, using that idea to something that bothered me, and I've given this to you a number of times. I'll give a very short version of it right now. To the Meraglim. There were two heroes to our Meraglim story. It was Kalev and it was Yehoshua. And we look at them as like Batman and Robin. I'm not deciding who's which. Just two very, very important people who were each other's sidekicks and wingmen. But if you look in the actual text, you will not find it to be the case at all. As a matter of fact, we know that when Moshe Rabbeinu davened, he changed Hosea's name to Yehoshua. It says, Rashi, Hashem, Ka, should save you from the advice of Meraglim. Have a Kalev. And it wasn't mentioned. And later on, in Paragi Gimel, in Pasuk Chabez, It says, "Vayalu Banegev." They went. Banegev, Vayavo Acharon, and he went to Hebron. He, in singular, Rashi points out over there, only one person went to Hebron. That person was Kalev. And why did he go? Because he felt himself being torn away. He felt Meraglim, the other people with him, the spies with him, he felt, except for Yeshua, they were starting to take a different route. And he felt his heart being torn away from him. And he went to Hebron to daven al kibri avos to pray, please give me the strength to pass this test. Not with Yeshua, on his own. And later on we're told, in Parakeet Gimel Pasuk Lamed, as the Meraglim were telling over their lies about the land, it says, Vayas Kalev Esa'am Moshe, that Kalev silenced the crowd regarding Moshe. And Kalev was like, I got something to say! And everyone was quiet. Yeshua wasn't anywhere to be found, just Kalev. And this is what Kalev says. Lishmoa, Mashi, the bear of Moshe. What's he going to say about Moshe Rabbeinu? What's he going to say? And he says the following, V'chizu bilvav asala ben Amram? You think it's the only thing that Ben Amram, that's Moshe Rabbeinu's name, but it's like more of a derogatory term, like someone's last name. This is all Ben Amram did for us. Everyone's about to wait for the next like pile on Moshe Rabbeinu. Another insult. Another rebellion. Hashomeya Hayasavur, says Rashi, the person who listened thought, Shabbalus Aper Begnuso. When we told Shaya Viliba Mamosha, Bishvil Dibra Amaragam, Shasku Kulam Shmo Gnuso. It's not Moshe Rabbeinu that they thought that he was going to be embarrassed, to be belittled. And then Kalev would come along and say, terrible Moshe Rabbeinu. They waited to hear it out. They were so excited. But instead, he said to them, Balo, Karolano Esayam, remember he took the seat for us also? Karolano Esaman brought the manna food down for us? Etc., etc. The place was shocked. They didn't see it coming. And later on, we're even told, in Perakid Dalid, Pasuk of Dalid, only about Kalev. Vabdi Kalev Ekev Ha'itzaruach Kheresimo. Kalev had a different idea in mind of the Meraglim. And he went with it, I'll give him a gift, I'll give him a reward, I give him Chevron. How about Yehoshua? So I'll share with you an idea that I think is emes. Sometimes you have in class that guy, teacher's pet, every day puts the apple on the desk, sits in front, takes notes, right? The guy most of us don't like, unless it's you, in which case I apologize for saying that. And then you have the guy who's like, yeah, he wants to be good, it's hard, he's got friends, you know, it's not cool to be teacher's pets and clowns, I'm going to study for tests, I'd rather cheat or take some of the girls' notes and copy those. And both of those exist. And most of us, I guess, I assume myself, I know for sure, was in part number two, category number two. And it's hard, we're not naturally good at certain things, it's overcome our challenges in order to be good at certain things. Yeshua was a teacher's pet. Moshe Rabbeinu's right-hand man, he was the next in line. Everyone knew that he would be Moshe's team. But Kalev? One of the boys. And they went to town. He went to town. Until he decided, I want to stop going to town. I'm not feeling it anymore. But I know it's a big pull for me. Speaking to a student of mine yesterday, I won't mention his name, but he knows who he is. And he was telling me about how, you know, he's boys. He's also boys from back home. How am I going to share with them, you know, that I'm not interested in doing these things anymore? How am I going to tell them that? Kalev had the same exact problem. You know what he did? He dived into a Kodesh Baruch Hu. He said, please give me the strength of character to man up. Help me defeat this terrible tzar that I have. Help me man up a little bit. And because he was misfollowed to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, when he felt himself being weakened, he succeeded. That's why everyone listened to him, because they all thought he was one of the boys. They all wanted to hear, what's Kalev going to say right now? And to their shock and dismay, he actually protected and defended Moshe Rabbeinu. When you go to the next stage of your life also, it could be the summertime you come back here anyways, next year perhaps, some of you. It could be Hawaii, it could be any college at all out there. You're going to be presented with a challenge also. Something's going to happen when one of your boys is going to give you a call. They're going to invite you. And then you really want to go, because that's your natural want. And you're going to have to man up and decide, do I want to follow the right thing or not? Kalev struggled. He had a Ruach Acheres. He had another side to him that he overcame. And that's why he and Yeshua were very different. They happened to end up in the same team, but they got their very different paths. If you're on the Yeshua path of life, great for you. You're a lucky man. But many of us are not in that path. We're more the Kalev guys. But Kalev just had to work harder, but he got to the same place also. Because he believed in himself that he could. He was chosen among the greatest people. The spies were great people. And when he felt himself becoming less great, he made sure that he earned back that greatness. There's a story told over in Living Inspired by the Akiva Tetz, named the Chafetz Chaim. I'll read the story to you. I'm over time, I know, but last time I was here, there was a guy who spoke for a really long time, and you guys sat still and listened, so I'm not going to take that much longer, but I'll just with a few more minutes, if you can bear with me. A Talmud of the Chafetz Chaim relates the story of his parting from his Rebbe. As a young man, when he left the yeshiva in Radin, he went to the Chafetz Chaim to say farewell, to request a blessing. As he entered the Chafetz Chaim's presence, before he could say anything, Chafetz Chaim said to him, "I am a Kohen." The Talmud was frozen. "What was the Chafetz Chaim telling you? Continue the Chafetz Chaim, and you are not. Do you know what that means? I shall tell you. When the Mashiach arrives and the Beis Hamikdash is rebuilt, we shall all be running towards it. When you reach the gates, they will say to you, 'You cannot enter. You are not a Kohen.' But I shall be allowed to enter. Do you know why? Because thousands of years ago, in the Sinai Desert, a great sin was committed and Hashem's honor had to be avenged. Moshe stood and called, 'Mi Lashem Eli.' Who is to Hashem? Who is for Hashem to me? The people of Levi, my ancestors, responded immediately and ran to his side. Yours did not. And therefore I descended from Kohanim, and you are not. That is the result, and that is between you and I." And after a pause, his final words to his speechless Talmud: "Sometime, somewhere in your life out there in the world, you will hear a call, 'Mi Lashem Eli?' Who is it for Hashem to me? When you hear that call, run." Muhammad Ali said, "A man who views the world the same at 50 as he did at 20 has wasted 30 years of his life." You spend a year learning yeshiva. A year. Whether you learned a lot, learned a little, participated in everything and only some things, you spend an entire year of your life here in Eretz Yisrael with friends in Rebbeim who care about you so much. This week's Parsha Nasa, we're going to come across a very unusual halacha, or not halacha, but reality. When a sota, a woman who's accused of being an adulteress, drinks the drink to see whether she committed the crime or not, two things are going to happen. She's either going to blow up, implode, or she's going to have a kid. We all do the Gemara Brachos, so we know it already. Chana herself, used this as a blackmail to God. She demanded a child from God. "If you don't let me have a child, I will become a sota and I'll be innocent and I'll have a kid." To become a sota requires you to go alone with another man in a room for a period of time in a romantic type of setting where your husband has told you he doesn't want you with this man ever again and you violate his words. And let's even say that you are innocent of all crimes. You're still a prutza. You're not a tsanuva. Why would you be given the greatest gift of life? A child. Okay, you're not killed. Macabre. But you're given gold? Doesn't make any sense. So I'll tell you the answer, I think. For someone to become a sota requires them drinking the name of God. You ingested the name of Hashem, you swallowed it in your body. A person who swallows God in your body can never be the same. You can't. You just swallow God. You can't walk out the exact same way you walked in. Something's got to happen, something extreme. You're going to implode, or you get the biggest blessing in the world, but you're not going to go back where you used to go back. If you invested in high-risk stocks, you don't break even. You make it big, or you crash and you burn. This past year, you ingested the name of God in your body multiple times. You spent a year working, davening, learning, trying your hardest. You cannot go back the same way you came in. It doesn't make sense. That means you wasted a year of your life. As Muhammad Ali said, if you're the same way you were at 50 to 20, you wasted 30 years. If you were Shah Al, Free Shah Al, put on the same exact way, then you wasted maybe one of the greatest years of your life. Muhammad Ali says, service to others is the rent you pay for your room here on earth. You don't have the right to not pay your rent. You have to serve others. It's part of what you have to do. As the rent that you pay for your room here on earth, you have to. It's your obligation. You can't even choose not to. It's inappropriate, it's immoral to choose not to pay rent. You're renting time here. You must pay it. What does it mean to pay rent? What does that even mean? So many people, I was among them, got it under in the last minute, daven last night, Erev Rosh Chodesh Sivan, it's Tefillah the Shloch, HaKadosh. You understand what it means to pay rent. And many of us had you in mind, you should know. You're also our children. Uvachein, it's Tefillah the Shloch for the children. What do we daven for our kids? What do we want from our kids? What does God want from us to want from our kids? I come in front of you, God. And I pour out. I give out my beseeching in front of you. And my eyes are waiting on you. I begged you. I asked so much. Just give me children. I want kids. I want them to have kids. And I want them to have kids. I want everyone to have a whole tribe of children. But here's the important part. The tachlis, because the ultimate purpose is Shehem Vani Kulanu Nasu Ketoras Kadosha. Not stop and take my space. Because I want so much for them and for me to learn Torah. L'mod l'amei l'shmur v'lasos v'lakayim. It's called the very Samut Rasechava. I want them to keep all the laws. Very Nini B'sar Secha, please let our eyes be enlightened with your Torah. To beg the Beit Mistech and let our hearts be clean to your mitzvahs, le'aval yashem echa. Then we say to God, Avinu Avrahman, God, my Father, my merciful Father, Tein l'chulanu chayim aruchim uberuchim. Please give us such a life, a long life like this. To have many years of your life where you don't engage in what we describe as now, of Torah and of connection to God, it's really worthless. It's worthless. It's not called paying rent. To pay rent in this world means that you connect to God who gave you this world. He's the landlord of this world, and He wants the rent He just described. How could you be immoral and not pay your rent? You wouldn't do that if it was real money. You wouldn't do that. He told you what rent means. Torah, mitzvahs, tefillah, chesed. That's rent. My kids didn't throw cups that day. They stop because when you're treated like an adult, you act like an adult. When someone trusts them to hold glass, long-stemmed cups in front of them, I mean, someone said to them, you know what? I'm banking on you right now. That you can stand to have this in front of you and not break it. I'm giving you something right now, and I want you to show me by rewarding me and rising to the occasion. It taught me a great lesson. When a person understands how great he could and should become, then there's no limit to our abilities. No limit. It's only when you hold yourself back, look in the mirror, and you feel, I'm a nobody. I'm not capable. It doesn't have to be in Israel when this happens. It could be anywhere in your life. It doesn't have to have had a good Shana Alf even. It doesn't have to have had a Shana Bet there. And if it did, then it doesn't mean it's not guaranteed anyways. Nothing's guaranteed. You hold all the cards. And God is placing in front of you the most beautiful, most fragile becher, cup, right in your seat. And some of you might have drank out of that cup disgusting drinks, but it's still sitting in front of you. And all you do if you want it is just wash it out and put the finest of wines in front of you. And it's there for you to take. Give you a blessing. You should be able to take some of Muhammad Ali's inspirational quotes and understand how it affects you in life. Be able to look yourself in the mirror. Know that you're here today because God counts on you. Like Rory McIlroy's father counted on him, but even more than that. And whether you succeed or not, the potential that you have is unlimited. Tell him Elohim, and God told you that. The Shem Bracha I would give you is that wherever you go next stage in life, whether you're back here or not back here, or somewhere you're going to be, you should continue to grow. You should be inspiration to those who know you, those who don't know you yet. Hashem, we should all be zocha to watch each other and be mechazik each other for years to come. Thank you. Thanks for waking up.
I need to talk to you.
I'd say what?